What this pandemic economy looks like in small town rural America on the program today from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Tuesday today, the 4th of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We will get out into the rural pandemic economy a little bit later on in the program, but we are going to jump ahead a little bit as we get going in the economic timeline of this first week of May in this 14-month of this pandemic. Friday morning, we are going to get the April jobs report. Likely going to be pretty good. Possibly could be in the seven figures. Possibly. Now, while it does lag growth in the overall economy, the labor market has been making its way back. But one of the hiccups of where the labor market is right now is that even with so many people out of work, a lot of companies still say they are having trouble finding people. That is especially true in manufacturing, where a report out from Deloitte today says only 60% of the manufacturing jobs lost this past year have come back. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore gets us going.
Chart Industries is hiring.
If there are people out there that are looking for welding jobs or engineering jobs, they are available at Chart.
Jerry Vinci is in charge of HR for Chart. They make equipment for super low temperature industrial operations like purifying gas. Hiring has been hard.
You know, with respect to welders, right, we've done all kinds of outreach. We've done in-house training programs. You're competing with many other companies.
He says that competition has gone beyond offering more pay to include things like workplace culture, inclusiveness. Manufacturing is one of the industries that had to ramp up during the pandemic, so there's more intense competition for workers. But there's an issue beyond the pandemic. Image.
If we go out and we do research on what do people think of manufacturing, they draw smokestacks and they draw the assembly line from, you know, the 50s, the 60s, 70s, 80s.
Carolyn Lee directs the Manufacturing Institute, which, along with Deloitte, produced a report on the manufacturing hiring challenge.
And what manufacturing really is today, when we go to factories, you see highly technology-driven, you know, clean, bright environments. You can have multiple careers and different jobs.
Daniel Zhao is a senior economist at Glassdoor. He says manufacturers in the U.S. need to think long-term.
The manufacturing workforce is aging. There are a lot of workers who are retiring, and it's important for the industry to make sure that there's a pipeline of talent.
No simple solution there. Industry experts say it'll take everything from more apprenticeship to immigration reform. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
It's a fair bet you haven't thought much about renting a car the past year. It's also a fair bet that with vaccinations taking hold, you might be thinking about a rental car for a vacation or maybe even a work trip. Well, good luck with that, because there aren't a whole lot of rental cars to be had. Marketplace's Scott Tong explains the market dynamics.
Used car auctions are crowded these days, with rental car companies bidding against dealers and retailers like CarMax and Carvana. It's a big change from a year ago, when Hertz and Avis and Company went lean to survive the early pandemic, says analyst David Paris at J.D. Power.
These rental car companies sold off large chunks of their fleet in order to right size for rental demand.
As the economy now roars back, rental firms can't replenish with new cars, because factories are missing key pieces of their assembly lines.
We've got all of this additional pressure from the semiconductor, seating foam, plastic issues.
So rental companies buy used at auction, pushing up used prices by 32% since January, Paris says. And that inflation trickles down to rental rates, sometimes $150 a day. Analyst Zoe Rahim is with Cox Automotive.
Consumers and households are paying these rates because it's, you know, just an opportunity for the consumer to get out.
He expects high rates and high used car prices to continue through the summer. So we'll hear stories like this from dealer and used car buyer Steve Lang. His company is 48 Hours and a Used Car.
A friend of mine had a three-year-old Jeep Wrangler that he was able to sell for more money than what he bought for it brand new back in 2018.
Lang has 10 words of car advice for me. Don't spend anything. Don't buy anything. Sell your extra car. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
I got a minivan they can have. I'm just saying. On Wall Street today, pay no attention to what Janet Yellen said. Seriously, do not. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The planet is getting hotter. That is just the truth. And there are all kinds of data and reports and analyses that'll tell you the hows and the whys and the risks. From the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration today, though, a relatively simple measure. What is normal anymore? NOAA updates what are called its climate normals every 10 years. And in a lot of places, normal is getting both hotter and wetter, and at a rate that has increased rapidly over the past 40 years. So Marketplace's Kimberly Adams explains what the new normal means for this economy.
NOAA looks at what's been happening in the weather over the last few decades to give a baseline of what normal weather looks like all over the country. The recent changes are, as the agency says, subtle, but the trend reflects what many of us are seeing, says Sandy Duncan, managing editor of the Farmer's Almanac.
Well, everybody has noticed that things seem off. You know, we see these flowers blooming earlier, or perhaps the robin came back a little bit later or a little bit sooner.
And what's off for a casual observer or gardener can be serious if you're a business making major investments. That can mean public utilities making different estimates about how energy and water will be used, or higher insurance rates in places more likely to see storms. Kia Javamardian at McKinsey says he talks to insurance companies all the time.
They'll use the data to, you know, understand where their risks are placed and is their portfolio more risky, less risky than they thought.
And then there's the agriculture industry. Ariel Ortiz-Bobea teaches at Cornell University.
Climate change is operating as a headwind, and it's really sort of slowing down the global agricultural productivity growth.
And while this latest data tracks with what many farmers already know, seeing the hyper-local breakdown of what makes the new normal can give them additional resources to plan for the future. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
You know what ought to be normal for all y'all? Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report, that's what. Check it out. More than a year living in a pandemic world now, and a lot of people's thoughts have turned to what am I doing with my life? And work is a big part of people's lives. One in five workers, and this is according to a survey from Prudential, one in five workers have changed what they do entirely over the past year. Yes, some of that is because of layoffs, but a lot of people said their career changes were about finding a better work-life balance or just wanting to try something new. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab looks at why this year has made so many people reevaluate what they do.
It's pretty hard to find private space at Allison Lee's new job.
My roommate just popped in. She's using the restroom.
Lee works on a 200-foot yacht docked in Fort Lauderdale, and her roommate, the person she shares a bunk bed with, is her boss.
Okay, we should be good now. Sorry.
Lee used to work in digital advertising. She spent most of that career job hopping and city hopping from Chicago to Minneapolis to Denver. When the pandemic hit and life slowed down, she was forced to confront this nagging feeling she's had for a long time, that she's been wasting her time.
And I just found myself really unhappy, and I realized I couldn't do it any longer than a whole 9 to 5 and glued to my chair every day. I knew I needed a change.
She quit her job, put her stuff into storage, and took a yacht safety course where she learned how to put out a fire at sea and save someone from drowning. She moved into a crew house where industry workers stay between gigs and found a job as a yacht stewardess. It isn't glamorous. The cleaning is so detailed she has to use Q-tips, and she makes $3,000 a month, much less than she used to. But Lee hopes this job will eventually allow her to see the world.
It was a life goal of mine to hit 30 countries before turning 30. But then the pandemic hit, so now's the time. Not getting any younger, and I did it.
The pandemic has made a lot of people examine what they do for a living. Office workers facing boredom, or healthcare workers facing burnout, and all of us facing mortality.
It shakes people up. It makes them really think about how they're spending their time, who they're spending it with, what they're spending it doing.
Amy Rosneski researches the meaning of work at Yale School of Management. She says challenging events can make us reevaluate our values and identities and push us to take chances. And because a lot of people aren't getting dressed up or lunching with coworkers anymore, they're just left with the work itself.
What seemed tolerable before may not seem tolerable anymore. It may seem look very different.
Some people may even discover a sort of calling. For instance, after 9/11, interest in joining the military increased by 8%. Rosneski says people also experienced this after the death of a loved one. That's what happened to Karina Toda. She spent more than a decade watching her father suffer from progressive supranuclear palsy, or PSP, a rare brain disorder.
To see him lose the ability to walk, to talk, to swallow, I think I really began to question what is living.
Toda's family disagreed about how to handle her father's end-of-life care. It wasn't until years later that she learned about death doulas who helped support patients and their families. In 2018, she left her job leading strategy for New York City Public Housing.
I remember writing the goodbye email to my colleagues, and I barely mentioned the sort of end-of-life thing because I knew it would freak people out.
It did, though most people were ultimately supportive, even when she struggled to break into the industry. The job has also taken a toll on her mental health, but she says it's important for her to do work that gives her purpose. And studies back this up, that people who find meaning in their work are happier. Of course, changing careers requires risk that isn't financially feasible for everyone. Kat Koh, a career coach in San Francisco, tells clients to identify what they like or excel at and try to make it a bigger piece of their work or explore a passion project. And if you're still feeling restless,
it's important not to take those emotions and experiences and maybe just pin it all on your job.
Our worlds won't only be work and home forever. As more of the country opens up, the life piece of work-life balance will come back. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Coming up.
The walls were Pepto-Bismol, like dark pink.
Not my first choice, but hey, you do you. First, though, let's us do the numbers. Dow Industrial is basically flat today, 34,133. The NASDAQ down almost 261 points. That's 1.8%, 13,633. The S&P 500 dropped 28 points, two-thirds of 1%, ended at 4,164. So Janet Yellen real quick. She said yesterday interest rates are going to have to go up, about which, of course they are. They're basically zero now. Come on. And on this May the 4th, we thought it appropriate to mention the Force has been with the Hasbro company, which saw its Star Wars revenue surge nearly 70% in 2020. That despite it being the first year without a Star Wars theatrical release since 2014. The Mandalorian came to the rescue, streaming on Disney Plus, boosted sales of lightsabers and Grogu, Baby Yoda toys. Hasbro stock dipped 1.1% today. Disney down 0.2%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. President Biden said today in another of his now regular vaccine strategy updates that the federal government is going to move away from mass vaccination sites towards smaller, more local facilities, especially in rural parts of the country. In those rural areas, local doctors can have some pretty good insights into what's going on in their community and also in the local economy. Dr. Scott Anzalone owns a small medical practice in the town of Logan, Ohio. He is one of the 10 people we've been following in our series about the American labor force. It's called The United States of Work. Dr. Anzalone, it's good to talk to you again, sir.
Nice to talk to you again.
First of all, how's business, you know, the past couple of three, 4 months at Stagecoach Family Medicine? How are you guys doing?
We're very busy. It's exhausting at times. We carry on. Being in a rural town, I'm very busy almost every day.
Are you just getting a whole slew of new patients? Is that what's going on?
Well, actually, yeah. Just recently, I'm getting probably between 4 and 5 new patient requests every single day.
Wow.
I've been investigating to find out why, and it appears that we've had a couple physicians in neighboring communities about 20, 30 minutes away that have left or retired. And there's not many people in Logan that's taking new patients now.
Well, I was going to get to the labor market in Logan later on, but I'm going to go right there right now, because the last time you and I spoke, you had finally at long last found somebody to come in and you know, join your practice and maybe take it over. Or is that still happening?
Well, we're still talking. Wow. So it's a long process trying to find someone that's willing to come to a small town. I've got someone who's finishing residency here soon and interested. However, being in private practice is scary to many new physicians coming out. The uncertainty of medicine today is daunting to many.
Yeah. Yeah, which you understand. Talk to me about the bigger picture in Logan, just in terms of what it's like there after, you know, a year of pandemic. How are businesses doing? How's it going?
Well, things seem to be back to going full strength. Our schools are back. You know, we've been back almost every day except right before Christmas. So the schools are going well. All the businesses are currently open. The economy here is kind of crazy. So I've been here for 21 years, and I've never seen so many help wanted signs. We've got industry that's got signs up $20 an hour and full benefits. Every small business owner here, from our local pizza shop to our fast food places, they can't find workers.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the $20 an hour, because every time I do an interview with a business person and they say I can't find anybody, Twitter jumps all over me and says, you have to ask them to pay more. $20 an hour is not bad in a town like Logan, right?
No, I'm seeing signs for $18, $19, $20 an hour starting. And just yesterday, I saw an ad in the paper for another, you know, company and starting at $21 an hour with rapid raises and benefits.
Do you think, and you know, I'll acknowledge the detour I'm making here from talking to you as a small town physician to a guy who understands everything about the rural economy, but 10 years from now, as you look back on this pandemic, and maybe you're retired nearby or whatever, but what's Logan going to be like?
Well, I think it's going to be a different community. The property values in Hawkin County, where we live, are just at all-time highs, and everyone is cashing in on the rental vacation tourism. And we have a lot of people moving to our area that are actually retiring to this area. So that's a dilemma. I'll go back to our school. I sit on our school board, and we have one of our fairly new elementary buildings that was needed when we built it a few years ago, that it's becoming emptied because in that area, out in that part of the county, everyone's selling their land because they're getting such good prices for it. And then those that are moving in are either buying it for building rental cabins, or those who are retiring with no children. So the building's starting to become empty.
Oh, man.
So the demographics are changing.
So as a guy who's been around for a while, and my guess is you'll probably retire there whenever that comes, because you've been there for 21 years, is that all right with you? Are these changes okay with you?
As long as we control it, I don't want to see strip malls and tourist trap type, the atmosphere. As long as we can keep that look or that feel to it, I think I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But we still have to have the base here, because the tourism, it's usually seasonal. So those who live here, we still have to make sure that it's still sustainable for those who live here.
Yeah. Dr. Scott Anzalone, he's a family medicine guy in Logan, Ohio, also on the school board and an observer of that part of this country. Dr. Anzalone, thanks for your time. I appreciate it, Scott.
Hey, thanks for talking to me.
There was a poll out from Gallup a month or two ago that showed that for the first time in 80 years, American adults who belong to a church, a mosque, or a temple are in the minority, just 47%. Could be the pandemic, could be another thing that was already happening that was accelerated by the pandemic. But shrinking congregations can take a bite out of church finances, and passing the virtual collection plate or holding a pancake breakfast on Zoom just isn't going to cut it. Predictions are more and more churches are going to close over the next decade. So who do you call when you need to unload a church, and who is in the market to buy? Marketplace's Matt Levin takes a look at the increasingly hot market for houses of worship.
Real estate agent Tom Casaza says showing a church isn't all that different from showing a house. You give the basic specs.
Office for the pastor. This area here with the nave, 1,200 square feet.
Highlight some special features, like a room where the kids can make noise.
And then this here is for someone that might have a crying baby, and then they can be part of the service, but separate.
Picture the classic Little White Church, the kind of place you might expect to see Laura Ingalls Wilder on a Sunday morning. Only it's in Walnut Creek, a pricey Bay Area suburb. The church comes with central air and a liquor store down the block. For a congregation meeting in a multi-purpose room right now, it could be the perfect starter church. Buyers love the curb appeal. You can see the steeple from the street.
The price is up there.
A little over $1 million. Casaza thinks his seller would prefer the church stay a church, but valuable parcels of land in affluent suburbs don't come on the market all that often. And when they do, developers line up.
We're not looking at a particular type of buyer. We're in an area where a house this size could definitely go for $1 million.
There's no Church Zillow tracking prices, but in some places they're climbing along with home values. And inventory is rising. Patrick Dugan is a reverend and director of the United Church of Christ Building and Loan Fund. It provides mortgages to churches.
There's almost an article a day since the pandemic began of how the churches are going to close everywhere and all that kind of stuff.
Some of that is overblown. Many non-denominational congregations are growing, especially in immigrant communities. And Dugan says he gets plenty of inquiries about interest rates, which track commercial loans at about 5% now, depending on creditworthiness. Which you judge how exactly?
We look at debt to income. We look at loan to value. So we do look at similar things to banks, but we also look at how long has your pastor been there? That's an important factor.
Also important, how popular the pastor is.
You know, once you start probably doing maybe 10 to 15,000 a Sunday, you know, at that point, they begin to say, okay, he's trustworthy to take a $2 million loan.
That's Sam Morris, pastor of Bay North Church of Christ in Fairfield, a city about 45 minutes outside Sacramento. His congregation's not there yet, but it's growing.
We started in a community center, and from that journey, we've grown to about 400 members, and we now occupy a 6-acre, 36,000-square-foot campus.
Actually, Morris's church is in escrow on the property, kind of a lease-to-own deal, while Morris waits for the financing to come through. It helps that Bay North has other revenue streams. The gym is being used as a temporary homeless shelter, which the city pays for, and donations are actually up during the pandemic. Morris used some of that money for remodeling.
So when we first walked here into this particular sanctuary, it was a totally different color, of course. The carpet was blue. The walls were pink. Pepto-Bismol, like dark pink. That was god ugly.
The Presbyterian congregation that technically still owns this place and chose those god-ugly colors is still here. It can be hard to leave your childhood church. And sometimes you don't have to. Even after the sale goes through, the small congregation will be able to worship here on a different part of campus.
I laid that deal out in front of them, and they told me, we have never heard anybody tell us that they won't buy it if we won't stay.
Plus, it sweetened the offer. The Presbyterians say so far they like what he's done with the place, repainting it in Bay North colors, burgundy and white. Turns out nobody loved the Pepto-Bismol pink. In Fairfield, California, I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today from the When You're the Boss, I Guess You Can Say Whatever You Want file. Jamie Dimon did a thing at a Wall Street Journal virtual event today. And at some point, the whole when are you going to bring people back to the office question came up. Dimon's response, in part, and this is a quote, I promise. We want people back to work. In my view, that is, sometime in September, October, it'll look just like it did before. And everyone is going to be happy with it. And yes, the commute. You know, people don't like commuting, but so what? And then he went on, I'm about to cancel all my Zoom meetings. I'm done with it. All right, we got to go, but here's your moment of economic context in which I point out that the pandemic is a business opportunity. Pfizer reported quarterly profits this morning. Its coronavirus vaccine added $3.5 billion to its top line, that's revenue, in the first quarter. Total revenue from the two-shot vaccine for the full year from Pfizer, $26 billion. $6. And you know what? Pretty much worth every penny, right? Our digital and on-demand team includes Ufuk Mehmetoglu, Olga Oxman, Erica Phillips, Brian Ronahan, and Tony Wagner. Star Nieves is our executive director of on-demand. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.